Welcome to The Protagonistas, a podcast that is centered on highlighting the stories and experiences of Black, Indigenous, and other women of color among communities of faith. Our conversations sit at the intersection of race, gender, sexuality, and spirituality. I'm your host, Kat Armas.
Hola, hola, friends. So happy to be here again. So last week I mentioned all about how life has changed so much for me in the last year and a half, but something that's changed more recently is the fact that a few months ago, my family moved out of our home in the city and into the woods. And we started our own little farm with goats and pigs and chickens and olive gardens. It's been so fun and so new. As you can imagine, I have so many words and thoughts to share about that. But before I do, I'd love to say welcome to the Protagonistas. So, as many of you might know, I've been on a journey of rekindling my relationship to the land the last several years. If you read my first book, Abuelita Faith, you know this is part of my embracing an Abuelita theology of rerooting and rewilding, of reconnecting to my antepasados, my ancestors. To be sure, this new endeavor, the farm life, or as Abuela would call it, because it's how she was raised, living in el campo, requires a whole lot of learning and a whole lot of work. But being here has felt so vaguely familiar, like a remembering, a homecoming. It's been such an incredible reminder that we belong to the earth and she belongs to us too, and that we are made of the very same things. So I learned something beautiful recently. Did you know that Charles Darwin never actually said that survival is of the fittest? Apparently, what he really said is that survival is of the fit. It was biologist Herbert Spencer who changed it to the fittest, and Darwin actually disagreed with this. Instead, Darwin posed a hypothesis for human evolution that centered sympathy. Communities which included the greatest number of the most sympathetic members, wrote Darwin, would flourish the best and rear the greatest number of offspring. Biologist Janine Benyus explains that what Darwin meant by survival of the fit was the notion of being fit to place, as in fit to a community. You see, in the natural world, organisms don't just move into a place. Instead, they co-create a place, and then the place creates them. Survival of the fit is then a coming back to fittedness, as Benya says. It is a working and being together that, well, fits. And for Darwin, sympathy was the key to this. Isn't that such a paradigm shift? In the context of empire, we've interpreted the notion of survival of the fittest to justify competition, hierarchy, and domination. We've affirmed this idea that certain organisms should beat out others with strength and aggression and violence. The weak links will die out, and this idea has proved detrimental, friends, in the shadow of empire, because that's how humans have been treated, how we've treated each other. The so-called weaker ones in the eyes of the dominant culture have been ignored, excluded, and even exterminated, thought of as inferior and so enslaved to serve the so-called stronger. But this isn't how nature functions, nor is it what Darwin intended. Instead, we all fit into a place, this place, together. We settle into a rhythm and a culture and a way of living and working together that fits for all organisms involved, because all organisms, including humans, evolve and change. And in this process, we become more and more at home where we are. Now, speaking of being at home where and in who we are, I was thinking recently about how humans are the only species who can refuse to be who we are. Right? Like dogs and trees and birds and flowers are the fullest expressions of themselves, but we as humans can be afraid of who we are or what we want. So we pretend to be someone or something else all of the time. And I can't help but notice how much of a factor religion plays in this. In some Christian circles, we're told that to be loved or accepted by God, we must contort ourselves so much we lose sight of who we are, resulting in feelings of shame about the things that make us us. And this includes our questions, our doubts, and especially our desires. But here's the thing, I don't think Jesus meant for it to be this way. In one particular instance in the ministry of Jesus, he finds a man possessed with demons who the whole town was afraid of. The man approaches Jesus and Jesus asks him, "What is your name?" An interesting question, isn't it? We tend to think Jesus is asking the demons what their name is, probably because it's the demons who answer Jesus' question, but I can't help but wonder if Jesus was really asking the man. Perhaps he wanted to know who this man is. I love Howard Thurman's thoughts on this. He says that for a moment, the possessed man's tilted mind righted itself and he said, "That's it. I don't know. There are legions of me and they riot in my streets. If only I knew, then I would be whole." Sometimes, friends, we can be so overwhelmed with the noise of the world or the noise of a faith tradition that tells us who we ought to be, what we should want, forgetting all along who we actually are. But Jesus beckons us again and again, "What is your name? Who are you?" In the same way, evangelicalism taught me to ignore my desires, to disregard my wants, to regard quote-unquote God's will above my own as if those two were opposed things. But what's interesting is that throughout his ministry, Jesus also asks folks over and over again another question I just love. Something akin to, "What do you want?" "What are you seeking?" he asks one person. "What do you want me to do for you?" he asks another. And this is striking to me. Perhaps instead of ignoring our desires, Jesus was offering another way, inviting folks to know and understand them. Perhaps Jesus was keen on something I now know to be true, that actually knowing what it is I want is key to living fully into God's will for my life. So I ask you, friends, what are you drawn to? What moves you? What brings you joy? What breaks your heart? The answer to these questions is important because knowing the answer to these questions offers a path toward our liberation, not just individually, but for our collective whole. When we live into the answers to these questions, we are better able to love and care not just for ourselves, but for each other. And sometimes, friends, when I forget the answer to these questions, when I lose sight of who I am, when I want to feel whole again, I simply start just by watching flowers being flowers, or dogs being dogs, or birds being birds, and I remember the healing wisdom of creation, that all they know to be is fully who they are. This is survival of the fit. It's also an invitation for me to be my full self, too, unashamed and unafraid of all that I am. And friends, this is your invitation today, too. to be your full self, unashamed and unafraid of all that you are. Thank you so much for listening, and know that part of this reflection was taken from my upcoming book, Sacred Belonging, which is available now for pre-order. So go order it. I will put the link in the show notes. I love you all. Talk soon.